I'm John Fall. Coming up on No Limits, in order to mark Global Entrepreneurship Week, we will talk about the spirit of innovation in business. We will discuss what defines an entrepreneur, what qualities and characteristics make someone a successful entrepreneur. We will talk about the skills that entrepreneurs can be taught and those that they just have to have. We will talk about all of this with our guests, Cha-Cha CEO Scott Jones, Cafe Patachou founder Martha Hoover, and Apparatus founder and CEO Kelly Fletterer. You can join the conversation by calling us toll-free at 1-866-476-3881, emailing us at nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism. We are talking today about Indiana entrepreneurs in connection with Global Entrepreneurship Week. I'm going to introduce our guest in a moment, but I wanted to say we got some feedback from last week's show on veterans returning to Indiana and the challenges that they face. Most of the feedback was quite good, but several of our listeners pointed out that it might have been helpful to have a vet who had not landed a job or was not secure in reentry yet. We think that's a fair point. We plan, obviously, to do another show on that in the future. In the meantime, I want to thank you for sending the suggestions along. We're grateful that you listen to us. We're listening to you, too. Now, I want to introduce our guest for today. It's a pleasure. We've got a great panel. Scott Jones, who is the CEO for Cha-Cha. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Glad to be here.
Good to have you here. Martha Hoover, who is the president of one of my wife's favorite restaurants, Cafe Patachou. Martha, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, John.
It's good to have you here. And Kelly Fletterer, who is the CEO and founder of Apparatus. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. Good to be here.
It's good to have you all here. I'd like to invite our listeners to join the show by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can email us questions at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I want to start with kind of a basic overarching question, because entrepreneur is one of those words that just floats out there, and I would like for us to start with something resembling a definition. And I'll start in the order in which I introduced you, I guess. Scott, how do you define an entrepreneur?
An entrepreneur, I think, is someone who is bold and willing to think outside the box and color outside the lines, create things. And here in Indianapolis, we've created a really cool opportunity for kids to learn that at a very young age, just as we did when we set up lemonade stands on the corner.
Talk a little bit about your lemonade initiative.
So, this is our third year. It'll be in the spring, in the middle of May. And in the last 2 years, in our first year, 2 years ago, we were the number one city, and there are now 30 cities doing this across the country. It was started in Houston, Texas, by a Hoosier, by the way, who's very entrepreneurial. We were the number one city in the country ever. We hold the record for the most number of lemonade stands. We had over 7,000. And then last year, we had 10,000 lemonade stands set up on street corners around Indianapolis by kids K through 8 who are making over $100 for their lemonade stand. And they spend the month prior to setting up this stand learning about entrepreneurship and what it means to create your own business. Location is really important for lemonade stands. So they pick that, figure out how they're going to advertise it, figure out their business plan, how much they're going to charge for each class of lemonade. And by the way, they get to keep the profits. Mm-hmm. And they get to, one of the things that I start when I'm teaching these kids about it is, what do you want for yourself? So maybe they wanted a Lego set, or they want a bike, or these days maybe they want an Xbox. So they decide that thing that they really aspire to get for themselves. They don't have to wait for their allowance. They don't have to wait for a Christmas gift or whatever. So they do that first, and that gets them really motivated. And then we teach them things about how they can not only get that thing for themselves, but put some money in the bank and also how to share with charities. So in this event last year, we raised over $1.3 million, but they gave to charities about $600,000 from one Sunday in May, where they became very entrepreneurial. And, you know, this is something they're going to carry through their entire lives, this experience.
Real quickly, because I want to get Martha's and Kelly's definitions, too, but say I want to sign my child up for this program. Where do I go to do it?
So lemonadeday.org is the website. And, you know, I'm constantly tweeting about it if you follow me on Twitter, at ChaChaMan. But on the website, Lemonade Day is the place to find out all sorts of things. And you can sign up at any of the libraries in the city, Marion County Public Library and the adjacent communities. So there's lots of different places to get the information.
Okay, that's great. Martha, how do you define an entrepreneur? Martha Hoover.
I define it in a much more simpler fashion. I really believe that an entrepreneur is nothing more than a glorified term for a small business person. I think some small business people are visionaries and do think outside the box. I think some small business people are non-visionaries, and it doesn't mean that they cannot succeed. You know, I read a quote from Warren Buffett, something that he had said about entrepreneurs, and he said that in every community, and there are entrepreneurs that are the initiators, there are entrepreneurs that are the imitators, and there are entrepreneurs that are the idiots. And he said that they're the three
eyes,
the three eyes of being an entrepreneur. And I stand by that definition.
Okay. Kelly, how about your definition of an entrepreneur?
Well, I think an entrepreneur is someone who goes out, starts a business, and takes a risk and brings some innovation to the business. And I like to think about in our business that we have an entrepreneur spirit mm-hmm. within the business, and we're not afraid to go out and take risks and start a new service or deliver some type of new product to our customers. And I like to think of that entrepreneurship spirit around the office more than I think about myself as an entrepreneur.
We are talking about the spirit of entrepreneurship here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've actually gotten a tweet from a woman named Kristen who obviously responded to the lemonade stand, said, thinking about your own lemonade stand, what can you say you learned from that you still use? Scott Jones, I'm presuming
yes.
That one goes to you.
Well, all sorts of things. So when I was a kid, I must have been 8, 10, 12 years old, I was, you know, there were lots of lemonade stands back at that time, you know, that we'd set up on the street corners. But, you know, I would plan for days about how I would make my lemonade stand out. And I'd have different flavors like blueberry and strawberry. I would freeze popsicles to go with the lemonade. I'd sell, you know, cookies with it. You know, the signs I would make were, you know, monstrous, at least felt that way at the time. But, you know, I'm constantly using those same skills that I learned when I was 8 years old in my business today with ChaCha, with my robot team, or the robot company now, that builds robots that mow golf greens mm-hmm. Automatically and precisely. You know, with Moog, the music service that was a spin-out from my other service, Gracenote, that powers iPhone music. So I'm using those skills of how do you think outside the box and do something different that's going to, you know, really change the world. So like when I did voicemail 20 years ago, I was constantly challenging myself. And as I was writing the code, I not only put in, you know, there's exchange codes for phone numbers and there's, you know, city codes and country codes, but I put in galaxy codes because there was a space shuttle, right? So I figured everybody would be using voicemail everywhere. So constantly always asking myself the question, how do I think just a little bit bigger or maybe a lot bigger than has ever been thought before about, you know, how to approach a problem. And, you know, to Martha's point, that doesn't have to be for something that affects 2 billion people like voicemail does or like the iPhone service. It can be in your small business. It can be for your lemonade stand as a kid. What can I do that differentiates? And I saw these kids just transform before my eyes into entrepreneurs, you know, literally in days, and sometimes on the day of Lemonade Day, you know, first they're looking at their shoes, you know, when the first customer, you know, rolls up in the car or walks by, you know, they're looking at their shoes and they can, you know, barely pour the lemonade and, you know, don't even think to ask for money, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're very meekly saying, you know, would you like a glass of lemonade? But by the end of the day, they're shouting it. I've got the best lemonade stand in the city, the best lemonade. You know, they're out in the streets, you know, shouting to the clouds about how great their lemonade is. And their jar on the front of the lemonade stand is filled, overflowing with dollar bills and quarters. So it's really, you know, amazing to see that
and
transformation.
And it's tangible results, too. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit, Martha and Kelly, and all three of you, ultimately. But I'd like to ask a question. You know, how did you start your businesses? How did you get the idea or whatever? Since it seems like the theme I'm hearing from all of you is it's innovation. It has to start with the idea. The execution comes later. What prompted you, I mean, to think of Pettishew?
Well, in my case, I opened up my first restaurant in 1989, having never worked in a restaurant. To further complicate this story, I also opened up my first restaurant in 1989, not knowing that I was then pregnant with my third child. So
the stress was probably pretty high at that point.
A big recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
You know, what I wanted to do was very, very simply, I wanted to serve food in a restaurant environment that was similar to the food that I served my own family at home. And in 1989, as any of you might remember, the food scene in Indianapolis was really abysmal. It was probably 1989 was probably the height of the worst kind of commercial farming and commercial food distribution that we have ever had. So really, what I wanted to do did not seem remarkably revolutionary to me, but it really was very innovative as I look back. The fact that I was choosing an industry that I had no experience in other than as a customer. And that experience as a customer taught me exactly what I wanted and, more importantly, what I absolutely refused to have.
We have gotten a tweet, actually, that's directed to you, Martha, and I think I'm going to weave it in before I come to Kelly. It just says, it's from Aman, and it says, for Martha, your employees are phenomenal. How do you cultivate that sense of warmth in your employees?
Oh, thank you, Aman. I really am proud of all my employees. You know, for years, people would say to me, how do you get these people? And I would always respond fairly, you know, I was a little embarrassed, and I'd say, thank you, thank you. Now I'm unapologetic. We actually get the same people that everybody else gets. We put a lot of resources into our people, a lot of resources into our training. And what we really do is I think, lead by example. Number one, we set very high expectations. And we require a lot of personal responsibility. And all those things, I think the most important is that we set high expectations and we expect everyone to meet those. And they do willingly because they buy into what the company stands for.
Kelly, your story here and how you became an entrepreneur, the idea for...
Yeah, I worked for a consulting company doing technology work and... In 1999, I decided that I'd had a lot of experience in an area that we call web infrastructure. It was needed. It was sort of necessary, but it wasn't. There weren't a lot of companies providing that type of service. So I decided I would go out and fill that need, and I would start my own company. And I sort of look back on it now. I just put in a 2 weeks' notice and quit my job and took the risk and went for it.
That is something I want to talk about. We are talking about the spirit of entrepreneurship here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We are talking with Scott Jones, CEO of Cha-Cha, Martha Hoover, who is the president of Pettishew, and Kelly Fletterer, who is the CEO of Apparatus. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana entrepreneurs. We're fortunate to have as our guests Scott Jones, CEO of Cha-Cha, Martha Hoover, who is the president of Potashu, and Kelly Fletterer, who is the CEO of Apparatus. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Julian who says, how would or should I start my own business? I think I've been throwing most of the first ones to Scott. I'll start with Kelly this time. What is your advice for Julian?
Well, my advice is to find out what the demand is for your product or your service, and whatever it is you put out there, you make sure there's value to your customer. I think if there's a high demand for it, if there's a value that is going to help you rise above the competition, or possibly even better, there is no competition, you've got a unique, innovative product, that's the key.
Yeah, you've identified a completely untapped market, basically.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Martha Hoover of Potashu, what would you recommend for someone who's just starting a business?
Well, in the restaurant business, we have lots of competition. We are, and my recommendation tying into that is not everyone can be so fortunate to have no competition. At the same time, when you have competition, it allows you to really focus on what you do that is better and what distinguishes you from your competition. We always talk about having to have compelling needs for customers. We have to give customers compelling reasons to come to our cafe, reasons that are very different from just serving food. What we really do is we serve food, but it's so much more complicated than that. I don't know what kind of business Julian is considering opening. I personally think that it's unrealistic to think that you would be fortunate enough to have no competition. Mm-hmm. So you better really do your research and think about what is going to set you apart and give people compelling reasons to come to you.
Scott Jones, how or what should Julian be doing to start a business?
So to start a business, what I always do and what I encourage the kids to do with their lemonade stands is, really think through a comprehensive plan of all the pieces that are going to be involved, starting with the customer, as Kelly and Martha have said, and understanding the competition because you want to be able to differentiate. But you've got to have something in your business that is going to really stand out and provide your customers with some value that they're willing to pay for. And so you want to have a comprehensive plan around that. And then once you've got it, you got to figure out how you're going to fund this thing, whether it's self-funded or go to your friends and family or maybe even go to venture capitalists. And
yeah, that was actually, you're anticipating my next question, which is where do you go for the seed money?
It all depends. Sometimes, you've got a job right now and you take it out of your own pocket because you believe so much in your dream and you've got a vision for how you're going to affect that. Other times you're going to, friends and family, to raise that initial capital to get your idea off the ground. And then there's other sources of capital, be it, banks, debt from banks, or going to more serious investors like venture capitalists. And it all, it really depends on what your idea is and how much money you're looking for. But one thing I did want to say about when you start a business, you can't know everything about your business. So you got to surround yourself very quickly with the people that fill your gaps and have great people. And Martha and I were talking before the show about, getting tens, making sure you're going after the people that, that are ranked 10 on a scale of 1 to 10, maybe even get some 11s in there. But it's very important, the people that you get to work for your business and the advisors that you get for your business. So surround yourself with all the people you can think of that can help you affect this business that you want to start.
We are talking about entrepreneurship here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to us at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I've gotten an email question from a listener named Ellen Anderson who says, can your guests give their opinion of results-only workplaces? Have they tried or considered trying this sort of working environment? Martha Hoover, I haven't started with you yet on one of these.
Results-only workplaces would not appeal to me. It didn't appeal to my personality. My role models for business people would not have worked for them. That's an old management style that I think is increasingly becoming irrelevant in the workplace. There are lots of reasons why I opened my business, the least of which was to make money. And I think that's a common theme of when I read about entrepreneurs that have gotten huge and been very, very successful. They will always tell you that they got into their business because of a passion and a talent, as opposed to a true desire just to make money.
What were your reasons for wanting to?
My reasons, simply, as I said earlier, were to be able to. There were no restaurants that served the kind of food that I wanted to feed my family, and I thought certainly I'm not a very unique person. If I'm thinking like this, there are other people. To refer back to Kelly's comment that there was a need, there was a niche that was not being filled for the quality of food that I wanted to eat. And I thought, certainly, if I open up a place, there are going to be some other customers who want to eat this kind of food. It was that simple.
Did you think it was going to get as big as it?
No. When I opened my first restaurant, I never thought that I would have 8 and soon 10 and 12 restaurants, and looking at other markets. That was not really in my universe at the time. Our management team, and the vision of the company has grown, which I think is another really critical component to having a successful small business or being an entrepreneur, and that is accepting opportunities and looking and being able to change and to do it pretty nimbly.
Kelly, what do you think of results-only workplaces?
Well, I don't think results-only workplace would work for us. We're a very people-intensive business. We touch the client quite often and every day, and I think if you've got the right type of business, it's kind of intriguing to me to think about that. But I don't think it would work for us. Our employees are kind of definitely the strong part of our business, and we hire the best talent and just the best employees we can find, and they generally want to be engaged in the workplace. And they like coming to the office. They like going to clients. They like that interaction. And to me, the results only workplaces, a lot of people working from home, a lot of conference calls and things like that. And I think my employees prefer to be engaged on a daily basis.
How about you, Scott Jones? What do you think of results only workplaces?
Well, certainly results are important, but it is all about the people. That's what Martha and Kelly have been saying. And so you invest in your people and you get them excited and ignited around a passion, right? So there's a vision for the company. There's usually, some way, whether it's small or large business, that this company can impact the world. So I'm all about change the world and getting people excited about it, no matter, where I'm pointing a particular company. And, that's what people get excited about. And as a side effect of that, you get results.
We have Martha Hoover. Yeah.
I just there are really three bottom lines for every business, mm-hmm. profit being the final bottom line. But as everyone has said, the first two really are people and product.
And I want to actually, Scott's comments and yours, Martha, have provided a perfect segue for one of our tweets from a listener named Steve. Says he loves the topic. And says hopes that that will remind listeners about the importance of entrepreneurs in the church and nonprofit world. Do we make a mistake by thinking that entrepreneurship is really just for business people? Martha Hoover.
Well, I'm looking at that question from two different levels. One, I think that probably all of us here are examples of entrepreneurs who are connected also to their community and do a lot in the community. And on the second level is I think not-for-profits should probably and are probably the responsible ones run their organizations as if they are running small businesses.
Anyone want to add anything?
Yeah, pitch in there. So Greg Seifert was my CTO up until recently. He'd been with me for about a year. Prior to coming to work for Cha-Cha, he had been doing some social work in Haiti. And has really been doing mission work through the church and beyond. And he decided to go back to that, to be a social entrepreneur, and is figuring out, how do you do that in the nonprofit world? So it's very exciting. I'm very supportive of the work that he's doing.
We have gotten a tweet from a listener named Stephanie saying, as an entrepreneur, are you always looking for the next business to start? Scott, I think that one speaks more to your profile probably than the other.
You know, I am. Scott, you know, I am always looking for the next business to start. I don't know if it's fortunately or unfortunately, you know, I've filled many notebooks with ideas. So ideas are really, you know, 1% or maybe 0.1% of the whole deal. It's all about execution. So it really goes back to what we were talking about earlier about having a plan, understanding your customer and the product and the competition, and understanding whether that's a viable idea. So, you know, you can always, I find that I get, very passionate about some of my ideas, and I wake up in the morning or maybe 3 days later and decide, gee, that wasn't the best idea, as good of an idea as I thought it was when I first conceived of it. So let it percolate a little bit. Test it out on your friends and advisors to figure out. But yeah, I'm always looking for the next big thing constantly.
Martha Hoover, you mentioned earlier and along this theme that, you know, when you started, it was just going to be the one little restaurant, and now you're looking at an expanding number and pushing out into new markets. I mean, how much of your time do you spend thinking about that sort of stuff?
You know what? In 1989, I was the manager, the cook, you know, the server. I was doing everything. And then, as Scott alluded to, I realized very quickly that in order for us to succeed, in order for me to succeed, I really needed a diverse pool of talent. Over the last 5 years, we have established a great management team and are working very, very quickly to fill a strategic plan that's in place to do some growth. No, in 1989, I did not think that I would be where I am today. But one of the advantages I had was when I was successful, I realized that our restaurant struck a chord. Mm-hmm. And that there were other opportunities for us. I am unlike these guys, I'm not looking for other businesses. What we do every day is focus on what is in our interior, how we can make that better. I'm sure they're going to say we do that too. I do think there's a difference between the tech world and the restaurant world. Restaurant stuff is so hands-on, mm-hmm. truly artisanal if it's done the proper way. We work every day to improve.
And it's about the relationships.
It's about the relationships, not just with our customers and our staff, but also with our vendors, you know, with the farmers that we've been using since 1989, the people who are doing creating product for us. So, you know, it's a very different world than what these guys are doing.
Kelly, how about you? Are you always looking for the next business?
Well, I'm always thinking of the next business, but I tend to get really focused on what I'm doing. And the current company, Apparatus, which has been my only company, I guess. We're on a bit of a streak right now. We've got a lot of momentum, and I'm working a lot on that and spending all my time on that. So I kind of put those ideas in my back pocket. Some of them are terrible. Some of them I think are good, but maybe another day. I really focus my attention on the company now.
So, John, I just wanted to pitch in here.
Yeah.
The filter that I use when I'm thinking about a new business, you know, after I've had a little time to percolate on it, is, am I going to leap out of bed, you know, passionately about this idea, not just today, tomorrow, next week, next month, but for the next 5 or 10 years? Mm-hmm. Is it that exciting of an opportunity? And that's I find that to be a great filter. And the secondary piece of that is, and can I get other people excited about it? And you can tell pretty quickly whether people get a sparkle in their eye for the idea that you're, you know, pitching to them. And so
I want to follow on that theme. We are talking about entrepreneurship here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Certainly. Your question, please.
My wife and I are entrepreneurs at heart. We are starting a small business right now, but it has a large-sounding name, the Indianapolis Music Institute. And we only offer, you know, piano and voice and guitar lessons, but we want to grow it into something substantial. So any advice on starting a home-based business that you want to eventually be a real part of the city? You know, where do you make the leap with limited capital?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call. Well, Martha Hoover, I think that you probably have the closest parallel here
okay.
to what he's talking about.
I can weigh in on that.
Yeah,
you know what? my sense is that you always start with the core competency of what you're doing, and it sounds as if you're giving music lessons at home and you want to take this and make it into a larger enterprise, and you know, you probably have all sorts of visions of you know, selling the concept or whatever. I am a firm believer in getting it right and starting and putting all your energy and passion and resources into doing something really, really well before you actually branch out. It took me several years before I had a second location. We are been in business since 1989, as I've mentioned, and we're just now on location 8. I'm a real believer in smart growth as opposed to fast growth. And I would say be patient and do it right. Make sure that not only is your product the best product, your people are the best people, but that your finances, that the financial health of your organization is also really strong, because that's really critical. Expanding too quickly can hurt you on all of those fronts.
Yeah, that's one of the cliches, is that failure is the most deadly thing, obviously, to a business, but too rapid success can be almost as deadly. I want to ask a question real quickly to fulfill kind of the promise of this show, is what qualities make for a successful entrepreneur? I mean, what things do you need to have to be good at this? And I see Scott leaning into the microphone, so I'm guessing that he's eager to comment on that.
Well, I think, you know, number one is a willingness to be bold and go where others may not have been willing to go. And a willingness, you know, you said, you know, you don't want to fail. Well, fear of failure is an interesting thing. You want to be able to not fear failure, so you move forward, but be willing to fail fast. Recognize that it is failing, tune it up. Like, be willing to stop it and tune it up and do something different and keep what was good about whatever was failing and move forward. So those are key skills as entrepreneurs.
Martha Hoover, what do you think makes it?
Well, tying into what Scott said, I think that understanding that you need to change and move that ball forward every day is the most important thing. So, yeah.
So being able, and Kelly Flederer, what do you think?
Well, I think, and also add leadership skills to that. So the ability to get your message out and to get everyone else on board and empower people to help you do that.
Well, and at different times, all three of you during this program have used the word risk. And I do wonder, having spent some time around a lot of entrepreneurs, whether that, I remember having a conversation with a friend who's an entrepreneur and saying, part of the difference, please don't take this the wrong way. They said, I'm not sure that you're necessarily smarter than the rest of us, but for whatever reason, you're wired that you can live comfortably with a whole lot more risk than the rest of us can. Are there certain temperamental qualities then that play into making someone a successful entrepreneur? Martha Hoover, Pat.
I do think you have to have a certain confidence level and a certain belief in what you're doing. And I guess that can be translated to passion. I have to be honest, it never occurred to me that we were going to fail. I walked into this restaurant world having nothing but confidence of success, and that has really taken us far.
We are talking about entrepreneurship here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter. At WFYI, our guests are Scott Jones, CEO of ChaCha, Martha Hoover, who is the president of Patashu, and Kelly Flederer, who is the CEO of Apparatus. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. We're going to continue talking a little bit more about the acceptance of risk. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, and your host. We are talking today about entrepreneurs here in Indiana. We're fortunate to have as our guest Scott Jones, the CEO of ChaCha, Martha Hoover, president of Patashu Incorporated, Kelly Flederer, the CEO of Apparatus, and I think I just mispronounced Patashu. It should be Patashu. You corrected me earlier, so thank you.
Well, how I corrected you? How did I correct you, John? I said, as long as you come in, you can pronounce it any way you want.
And I can guarantee we will come in. We do. If my wife has anything to say about it, and actually, we love going to the restaurant.
Thank you.
I want to pick up on that whole risk theme, but I want to get a listener's question in. This one comes from Marion Whiting, who says that she is listening in France right now.
Wow.
And wants to know, yes, we reached the globe, apparently. Is this lemonade project limited to USA, or can anyone encourage this attitude anywhere, or would I have to have permission?
Absolutely. Anybody can be participating in Lemonade Day around the world, globally. Go to lemonadeday.org to see all of the materials. And if you want to start up a city, I'm sure Michael, the founder, would be very interested in talking about that. We have 30 cities in the United States already.
Would this be the first one? So she would be an entrepreneur, an innovator, and
excellent. Yeah. Right, it's exactly what we're talking about. So, to my knowledge, this would be the first non-U.S. city.
Okay, well that's interesting. You can join the conversation by calling us here at No Limits at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. We've gotten a question from Marianne, who was driving from Chicago, and I think the cell phone signal was wavering in and out, but wanted to add, it seems that all the guests have a secret to success, high standards. Comment on that. Martha Hoover, you're nodding your head first, so I'm going to throw it to you.
I think that might be one of the most important things in setting any business apart is running ahead of the pack. And you have to have high standards to do that. And you have to have high expectations of everyone who works for you and with you.
How about you, Kelly?
I agree. Absolutely high standards. We expect so much out of each other at the company. And I think the results we get are a direct result of that. But when we started the company, I was on my own, and every employee I hired, my goal was to hire someone better than me. So I'd meet someone, we'd talk about technology, we'd talk about their passion about it, and every employee I started hiring knew the technology better than I did. And I think that's been a key for us. And it's high standards, and maybe I'm not sure I was the bar, the high standard bar, but it was somewhere up there above me. So,
how about you, Scott Jones?
Absolutely. High standards in every company I start, and it starts with the people, as Kelly and Martha have said, and that translates into quality of product. So, we wouldn't have had 2 billion questions already at ChaCha if we didn't have a quality product, but that comes from the quality of the 100 people, working here at headquarters at ChaCha and the tens of thousands of guides that are in their dorm rooms and at home answering questions on ChaCha right now in real time. And we're all about the high standards and the quality of both our product and our people.
We are talking about entrepreneurs here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Mel, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello, Mel.
Yes.
Welcome to the program. Your question?
Thank you very much. Yeah,
certainly.
I have a question. My wife and I have a business that is successful, but I have an idea of something I've never seen done, or at least in this area. I've done kind of what was suggested and batted the idea around with other people that I consider, reasonable. I've done some little testing of it, and it seems totally viable. But how do you make that next leap? How do you literally go from putting your foot in the water to jumping in?
Good question. Thank you very much for the call, Mel. Well, Scott Jones, you're leaning in.
Well, it's an open-ended question, so it's hard to respond not knowing what the business is or what its funding requirements are. But it really goes back to what we said earlier, which is have a very comprehensive plan. Test that against friends, advisors, those who know something about this business that you want to get started, and then figuring out how much capital do you have to kick it off the ground, and is it something you're going to be excited about for the next 10 years? And not every business has to be thought of in terms of a decade, but can you get really excited about this to carry it through? That will determine whether you jump off the cliff.
Yes, Martha Hoover.
Well,
Pettishew.
to lead into that, or leading in from that, is the fact that at some point you do just have to dive in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can do a lot of research, you can talk about it, you can talk to friends and advisors, but at some point you have to make the decision that you're committed enough to whatever this business is.
Absolutely.
That you are just going to do it, and you just make it work.
Well, and in some ways, and I'd like Kelly to weigh in on this too, it sounds like what I hear is, yeah, there's the financial question when we talk about capital, but there's also, for lack of a better term, there's also the personal commitment.
Right, the
capital
energy,
question,
your willingness to put the energy into it.
Yeah, the drive, and I guess I would ask here, you know, in Martha's case, you've been doing this for 22 years. Is it still as exciting and as fun for you as it was?
More exciting, more fun.
What makes it that way?
I think the energy and the you know, it's a very dynamic, we have a very dynamic company. When I say we, I'm referring to all of my staff, everyone who works at Potashu. I mean, we're dynamic. We've got a lot of momentum. We have a lot of energy. We've got a great vision for the company. And those things really push us forward.
How about you, Kelly? Is it as fun for you now as when you started in 1999?
Oh, yeah. I think it's more fun now. When I first started out, you know, every day was kind of teetering back and forth between having a successful day of, you know, maybe making some money, or not having a successful day and bringing on new clients. And the risk back then was just so much higher. Today, you know, we've hit this momentum where we're still taking risks. We want to do that, but there's a little more behind us. Mm-hmm. And we've worked our way into long-term contracts and all sorts of things to just make the business flow a little easier. And it's really fun and exciting to have so many great people around.
Scott Jones, is it as fun for you? I mean, this is sort of your, I've lost track of how many go-arounds.
Well, you know, I tried, after voicemail in my early 30s, I tried to retire, and it was the worst phase of my life, and I committed I would never retire again. So, you know, I'm absolutely about, you know, starting new companies and really taking them to a place where it really impacts the world. And so, you know, you take Chacha, for example. Yeah, it's fun. We started it 5 years ago, and now we're launching in the UK right now. We've got a new iPhone app that you can download. It's free, and it's a fantastic experience being able to ask a question about anything and getting an answer in real time, usually from, you know, somebody around the country, or it might be somebody nearby that can tell you what to order at the Potashu restaurant.
Potashu, actually. Yeah, Potashu. I realize that's all right. She doesn't care as long as we come to eat.
That's
there.
Right. I don't care how people pronounce cha-cha either, as long as they use it. And we also are powering New York City's questions. You know, all this stuff about Bloomberg right now. I mean, we're answering questions via text and being the city's voice via text on 311-692. So it's very exciting to push the envelope in all these different areas.
Martha Hoover.
You know, that reminds me what Scott just said. Whatever your business is, it has to be relevant and it has to remain relevant. And I think what you're talking about is a degree of relevancy that keeps you going. You keep it current.
Absolutely. Yep. You know, we look at Super Bowl coming up in the city here in Indianapolis, and, you know, Chacha is going to be that's our biggest day of the year anyway. And now that the Super Bowl's here, you know, it's a perfect resonance. And so we're going to be answering tons of Super Bowl questions, not just about the players and the teams and the, you know, statistics and all that, but, you know, now what, you know, where are the parties? Where are the restaurants to go to? What are the events happening in the city? So it's going to be really exciting this year.
Well, let me ask you a question, because I remember talking with the same friend who was an entrepreneur who had been very, very successful, had made more money than probably the next 12 generations of his family could spend, even if they worked at it really, really hard. And I said, what keeps you going? What's the drive? It can't really be about the money anymore. And his response was, well, yeah, to some degree, I just like the deal. And I, you know, the money's a good way to keep score. By and large,
I like that.
What motivates all of you at this stage? Because you've all been successful. You're all
well. You know, the money gives you presents opportunity, and it's opportunity for not just you and your family, but it's also opportunity for the people who work for you and with you, and it's opportunity for your company. So it's a really, it's obviously the most important component when you talk about being able to do things for your community, your family, and your staff.
I'm going to try. We're getting close on time, so I'm going to try to get through a couple of these questions here. One we've gotten specifically from an Eileen Swanson in Fishers. I think this one's directed right at you, Martha, and it just says, her last question, she's got several here, is Martha planning to expand her business northeast to Fishers or Geist anytime soon?
We're always looking for the right opportunity and the right location.
How do you choose the location?
Well, I do it. It's very gut-based. I don't do demographic studies, you know, the way large companies do. I really don't. We still think, we still are a small company, and we think as if we're really a small company. So I still drive around, look at buildings, look at neighborhoods, look at the mix of clientele that I'd have between what is referred to as stroller moms and working people, you know. And that's really how I do it.
And what sort of things speak to you when you say that's the right location?
Well, I use the original location of Potter Shoe at 49th and Pennsylvania in Meridian Kessler as my bar. That, I think, is a neighborhood that still represents one of the finest urban neighborhoods in any city, bar none. And I like it because it has that mix of people, economically, socially, mix of businesses, mix of street life and activation. That's really important for any restaurant so that a restaurant has volume and life.
We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Mark who says, India is a large city but has challenges in the labor market. How easy or hard is it to find and retain high-quality employees in Indy? I'll start with you on that one, Kelly Flutterer.
Well, I think there's a lot of talent in Indianapolis and surrounding areas, and we've been really good at recruiting talent here. It gets much more difficult as we get larger. Mm-hmm. So we've expanded our reach a little bit, been recruiting outside of the state, been recruiting at more universities outside of Indiana. But that's our number one issue with growth is still hiring those tens. We've been doing it and doing a pretty good job at it, but we need more.
Scott Jones, how difficult has it been?
So it can be difficult, but the silver lining is that Indiana has some of the best universities in the country. In fact, I think I saw on a ranking that we ranked fifth in terms of a number of graduates that we're producing out of our great universities. Now, many of those graduates end up leaving the state. That's what they call brain drain. Mm-hmm. But we're reversing that. We're giving them, it's really, you know, the businesses in the community, we have to own this, right? So we have to create great opportunities for them to stay for. And the cool thing is we now have many of those great opportunities that we really didn't have 20 years ago in a bunch of different areas, both small and large companies. The other piece of this is that these universities have been creating this talent for years, and these people who have been successful, say, on the coasts are willing to and actually very interested in coming back home to Indiana. And so I think that's an opportunity for us as businesses to bring back that talent that's gotten exposed to what's going on in Silicon Valley or New York City or Boston and coming back here to really take us up a couple of notches. And that can provide a lot more tens in our community.
Diane, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Your question, please. We're getting close on time.
All right. First of all, Sam Jones is my hero with the Lemonade Day.
No, Scott Jones. Scott Jones.
That's what I meant. I just saw Sam Jones Highway.
Okay.
But
thank you.
Yes, I have the privilege of talking with your kids about philanthropy and want to know if once they've had to stand for a year or two, are you going to have Lemonade Day 102?
Thank you very much for the question.
Absolutely. You know, we're trying to take them to the next level constantly. And, you know, the kids take themselves to the next level. That's the really cool thing. So I know there was one story of a child named Ethan, who's 7 years old, who you know, did the best tasting contest, and he didn't win, and he was, you know, he didn't like that, right? He saw the competition, he saw what they were doing better, and he came back with a better game. He took his game to a new level, and he created a sign for his stand that, you know, 7-foot rocket ship. And then when he actually set up for Lemonade Day, what was interesting is it was next to Pike Library, and a woman came by and said, you know, asked him about his lemonade stand and how he got started, and you know, asked for the background on all of this, and he told her, and she said, "Can I write a check, you know, to support you?" And the things that he told her were, you know, why he was doing it. And he said, "I want to get this book that I've seen on Amazon." And she said, "Well, can I write your check?" And it turns out she wrote the check in the amount that would pay for the entire book. But the really cool thing is, in the memo, she said, "I believe in you." It was just incredible. And you know Ethan's coming back next year and taking his game to a new level, right?
We have been talking about entrepreneurship here on No Limits. I really want to thank our guests, Scott Jones, CEO of Cha-Cha. Scott, it has been a pleasure talking with you today. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. Yeah.
Martha Hoover, of one of my wife's favorite restaurants, the president of Potashu Incorporated. Martha, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
And Kelly Fletterer, who is the CEO of Apparatus. I really enjoyed talking with you, Kelly.
Thanks, John. It's great to be here.
And I also would like to thank all of our listeners. I am sorry we didn't get to all of your questions or all of your calls. I hope all three of these folks will come back to us at some point and sit down and do this again, because clearly there's a tremendous amount of interest. We are going to take next week off for Thanksgiving. I hope you will listen to our greatest hits program on that day and enjoy the day with your family. We will be back here on December 1st when we will be talking about World AIDS Day and HIV and AIDS in Indiana, the impact it has had, what reasons we have for hope. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Have a good week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.